Cairo, Seattle.
It's time to get schooled with a professor, John Clayton.
Welcome to Schooled with the Professor, and the topic obviously in Seattle this week is Earl Thomas, and it's been a topic that's been echoing through Dallas. It's been echoing really through Seattle for a couple months, go all the way back to the draft and before the draft, and is there going to be a trade? Is there not going to be a trade? We already know now there's going to be a holdout, which could lead to a trade, and joining us is Tim Kalishaw from ESPN Around the Horn, Dallas Morning News. You got your own radio show down in Dallas, but of course, I would imagine it's a topic down there, but as you just recently wrote, it doesn't look good again for a possible trade for Earl Thomas to Dallas.
Yeah, unless the Cowboys are doing a real good job of hiding things. It just seems like in this era of Cowboy football, which is more the Stephen Jones frugal conservative approach, they seem less likely to make a play for a guy who, you know, has played 8 years, and by the end of his next contract, you know, he might not be living up to the contract. Now, I think it's a big risk not to trade for him, because I've never seen, and you know this, I've never seen anybody so openly campaign to go to another team. He's in uniform on Christmas Eve at AT&T Stadium talking to Jason Garrett in the Cowboys locker room, and he's a perfect fit for now with this team, because they have all second-year players in the secondary, or all guys moving to new positions in the secondary. 2 years ago, they had Brandon Carr, Mo Claiborne, Barry Church, Orlando Scandrick back there. None of those guys are still here. So they could use a leader, and there's nobody better than Earl Thomas. So I think it's a tremendous risk either way, no matter what the Cowboys do.
Yeah, and it sounds to me like the value for the trade is not going to be that expensive. I mean, you know that they weren't going to give a number one, and I kind of get the feeling, as I know we've talked about it before, that they wouldn't give a number two until they really addressed the receiver need, and then they get into the draft, and they didn't really address the receiver position until the third round. I mean, have anybody been able to find out for sure, did the Cowboys offer a third, or was the offer a little bit less than that back at the draft?
I think it was a little bit less than that. And, you know, nobody's really pinned it down exactly. They clearly could have had him for a two if they wanted. They took another offensive lineman, which is their position of choice. They're in the process of making Zach Martin the highest paid guard. And that's a little what I've wrote about. Even before they did that, they had more of their salary cap money committed to offensive line than any team in the league. They're 32nd in the secondary in terms of salary cap. They spent 26% of it on the offensive line, 7% on the secondary. So to me, that you'd think, well, okay, so go spend a little on Earl Thomas. But doesn't seem like they're leaning that way.
Well, and that's the thing. You look back at last year, and I think I know I speculated that they were going to have a drop-off, because just like you mentioned, they let so many veteran guys go in the secondary, and they became too young in the secondary. And I think they paid the price for that, you know, particularly on defense.
They gave up a passer rating of 94.6 last year. That was 26th in the league, and the six teams that were worse all missed the playoffs. So clearly, this is a team that needs to do something to upgrade the secondary. And all they've really done is get rid of Scandrick and turn all the cornerback positions over to second-year guys. They've moved Byron Jones, who is a failed safety, back to cornerback and see if he can play there. They got Jeff Heath and Xavier Woods, who are limited in either talent or experience, depending on which one you're talking about. So it's a real roll of the dice to go into the season with this secondary. That's why I still think there's always a possibility of this Earl Thomas thing still happening at some point.
Yeah, but then when you look at it now, how much does this affect the scheme? Because Rod Marinelli's a cover two guy, and I know that a lot of teams have adjusted their cover two into some different things over the last couple of years. But I mean, is it play a cornerback's playoff, and you don't have one deep safety, or has Rod upgraded a little bit to try to accommodate what would be the best value for Earl Thomas if he would come in as a safety?
Well, as you know, Chris Richard is now the secondary and He has some cool title like past defense coordinator, something they can't call him the defensive coordinator, but he's going to have a large role, and he knows Earl Thomas as well as anybody from his time in Seattle. So he would clearly, I mean, they would be flexible on what they could do, change, modify things, allow him to play center field, do what he has done in Seattle if they were to get him.
Yeah, but I kind of agree with you. The odds are not good. And let's go into that feeling that you were talking about as far as, you know, Stephen Jones and the fiscal approach. Because, as you know, Jerry Jones was always one and has always been one to try to step up and make the big play, not afraid to pay somebody if he really felt that that was going to be the idea. What is Stephen's philosophy and how has he handled over the last couple of years?
He's much less likely to take the big risk. I mean, the one he gets the most credit for in recent years would be, you know, making sure his father didn't draft Johnny Manziel and they took Zach Martin instead. But I think he, you know, his approach, as you've seen the last two or three years in free agency, they don't do anything. They wait till the fourth or fifth day and then they go bargain hunting for guys for $1 million. And that's hurt him. They got lucky a couple years ago, but it hurt them last year. We'll see what it does this year. And I just think they have a situation where 2 years ago they were 13-3. Okay, they didn't do anything in the playoffs, but they were very, very good in the regular season. In my mind, they should be thinking, how do we get back to that? And they should be looking directly at Seattle. Same situation, able to win early with a quarterback who could play, who isn't paid anything. You know, Dak Prescott's drafted even later than Russell Wilson. He was a late fourth round pick. He's not making anything. And so take advantage of that. Go for it now and, you know, be a little freer with your money and try to get back to 13-3. Instead, they seem kind of content to, well, they went to 9-7. Maybe they'll get to 10-6 this year. It's just a very, very cautious approach.
Yeah, that really has gone against the philosophies of teams since 2011 with the new CBA, because the philosophies have been, if you have a low-priced quarterback, if you have a quarterback in his first contract, you load up. I mean, that's what the Rams did this offseason with the five trades that they made. Seattle did it back in 2013. You load things up as best you can, because once your quarterback starts making anywhere between 10 and 15% of the cap, you're now limited and then almost forced to wait out free agency 4 to 5 days. It seems like you know, Stephen's going against the grain with this one.
Yeah, it really is. And you know, they, again, I guess it's back to the offensive line. I mean, they have the highest paid guard, the highest paid center, the fifth highest paid tackle. They got to figure out what to do with Lyle Collins in another year. That's great to have a really good offensive line, but you can't spend all your money there. You got to spread it around, and they're not really willing. Other than they're going to have to pay DeMarcus Lawrence, they don't have stars on defense that they got to worry about. So I think they need that other star, and I think they need to take a shot with Earl Thomas, especially since I can't figure out what Seattle's options are now. So he can't, in terms of the draft pick, he can't cost you much at this point.
I think Seattle's pretty well in a tough situation, because at this stage, you look at, you know, Earl's now saying he's going to hold out into training camp. You know, they brought in three safeties last year, Bradley McDougal, who is flexible to play strong or free, and they drafted two, Tedrick Thompson and Delano Hill, and they're in a mix right now where they've got to find out, okay, do you go younger or do you go older? And they've had problems, you know, at least three times when they've gone into the third contracts, because Marshawn Lynch, Michael Bennett, Cam Chancellor, they didn't get able to finish those contracts. And so if you go third contract on Earl, and you even don't know if he's all in on this team, it's a tough,
right.
So they can't make an offer to him unless he gets here and he spends a month or two so they can kind of judge where he's at.
Yeah, it just seems a tough situation, and I don't know how much the Cowboys monitor that aspect of it. I guess he's had a couple Twitter run-ins with teammates, and so they just got rid of a guy who had a lot of social media activity at wide receiver, and maybe they're worried about acquiring another player from that same first round, by the way.
Yeah. So, I mean, now that Zach Martin's going to get his deal done, I mean, can they get a deal done with DeMarcus Lawrence? Because that's it's tricky to see. I was actually going through this the other day, and what you really don't see, I mean, the money for defensive ends are more in the 3-4 defensive ends, believe it or not. It's like it seems like it's hard for a 4-3 defensive end to get that top contract. I know Olivier Vernon was able to do it when the Giants paid him $17 million, but now he's at linebacker, and you look at the list of the 4-3 defensive ends, and it's like, okay, is the market 11? Is it 14? Is it 17? I know Lawrence is 17-1 under books right now as a franchise player, but what do you think they can pay him?
Yeah, I mean, that's you're right. It's going to be a tough call, and he really needs they can kind of wait that out and see if he can produce another season like he had last year. That, you know, last season was something they hadn't seen from him before. They'd only seen flashes last year. He was pretty much as good a defensive end in terms of pressures. He led the league, and, you know, the sack total was up there. So can he do it twice? If he does, then they're going to have to pay him right at the top. But you know, that I guess would be a good problem to have because they haven't had a pass rusher in years.
No, that's true. Now they have to take Coney Ealy off the street and hope he can do some things. And that's right. A scary part, I guess, from the Cowboys. And again, you know, and I guess the fiscal approach is in part because of their spending past. I mean, I think they lead the league right now in deals that they have to take base salary and turn it into signing bonus and do it. And that eats up so much of their cap. I think it's like about $26 million what it's eating up. And that kind of limits them. And it's even going to be worse when Dak Prescott gets his contract.
Yeah, they'd been doing that practice for years, and you knew eventually they would pay the piper for doing that. It was kind of an annual event, restructure Tony's contract, restructure Jason Witten's contract, move that money down the line as if those guys are going to play forever. And now all of a sudden in a little over 12 months, Romo, Dez, and Jason Witten disappear, and you got to do something with all that money. But the good news for them is by next year, all of that will be gone, and they will have some flexibility to do some things. That's why, again, I think the Earl Thomas thing has to be something that somebody in that building is still considering.
Yeah. Now, where do they stand as far? Because, again, I would imagine that they should have no trouble wanting to pay Dak Prescott because even though he dropped off last year, I think more of it was the wide receivers than him. And, of course, obviously the six-game suspension for Ezekiel Elliott. Can they be affording taking a $13 million, $14 million safety down the line?
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. They know they got to pay Dak, and they don't know how much. You're right. I mean, season two was not nearly as good as season one. They're gonna cross their fingers that wasn't really about Dak, and it was more about Tyron Smith missing games and having a terrible plan at Atlanta where Dak got sacked 8 times, Dez's drops, Terrence Williams' inconsistency. But on the other hand, this collection of receivers they got, where the biggest name now is Allen Hurns, I don't know if that's, you know, going to give Dak an opportunity to really pile up, you know, any kind of numbers in year three. That's going to be a great thing to watch to see if their new philosophy, we don't need an elite receiver, we'll just have a collection. To see if that thing can really work here.
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty clear because being at that Dallas-Seattle game that they had very little, if none, separation with the wide receivers, and that put Dak in a tough position. That includes, of course, Dez Bryant, who I guess with his metatarsal injuries lost speed and separation, and so you figured that they had to do something, but is it possible they could have fallen into the same trap as they did with the secondary, you're letting 3 and 4 guys go last year and either being too young or not being talented enough?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's something we talk about, is the secondary and the receiving core both. Is anybody out of either one of those groups going to be just anything even close to a Pro Bowl player? Anybody who you would even put in a discussion? And if not, then, you know, can you survive with that? Can you have a situation where you got a couple guys with 800 yards receiving and another guy with 600 yards? In theory, that can work, but I've said Dak needs to know whether it's wide receiver or tight end, who do I go to on third down? Who do I trust? It can't just be, well, you got 4 or 5 guys who are all about the same, see who gets open. I don't think that works. Just like I don't think the secondary has enough experience to handle, you know, most of the quarterbacks they're going to face this year.
Yeah, no question. When you look at that offensive line, though, it is really good. That's the one thing. And I honestly credit Steven for, I think, you know, steering Jerry away from making splash type moves and then concentrating on what's the most, not the most exciting position. But when you watch this line play, it's exciting.
Yeah, I mean, and they opened massive holes and they got Zeke, presumably for 16 games, barring injury, with no suspension looming this year. And that can save them from a lot of problems. That can cover up a lot of problems. If they are, just like 2 years ago, they weren't great on defense 2 years ago. They were okay, but they went 13-3 because Zeke ran for 1,600 yards and they kept the ball. And Dak didn't turn it over. He had four interceptions. So that's the goal. And this offensive line, if healthy, always gives you a chance to achieve that goal.
Yeah. What do you see as far as what does Dak Prescott got to do to get better this year?
Oh, I mean, you know, the turnovers were the big thing. He went from 4 to, I think, 13 interceptions and just made some bad decisions late in the year. Now but while Zeke was healthy last year and not suspended, you know, finding out on a weekly basis if he could play or not, for about 6 or 7 games, his Dak's numbers were as good as they were as a rookie. And there was even talk, like, is he actually better this year? He kind of seemed like he was in some ways. He regressed toward the end, and now he's got to find out, you know, can he develop something with Michael Gallup, a rookie third-round pick, a receiver, or Blake Jarwin, a tight end? It's a big test for him. He's clearly the leader of the team. Anybody who, you know, the people with the voices in the past, Dez and Jason Witten, even Skandrick, they're all gone. So it's Dak's team, and I'm just wondering if they've given him enough receiving weapons to make this thing work.
Yeah. How about the Dez Bryant story? Were you surprised that they finally gave up on all the antics on the field and the blow-ups in the sidelines and the lack of separation? Did you see this one coming?
I was initially surprised, but some of the things Stephen Jones said early in the offseason, going all the way back to the Senior Bowl, when he started talking about you got to weigh everything with Dez, including disruptions on the sideline. Well, nobody in management for years would even acknowledge there had ever been any disruptions on the sideline. They always said that was something the fans and the media didn't understand. That was Dez's fiery passion, and now they were disruptions. So Steven was subtly telling us through the offseason there's a real evaluation here, and it may not go well for Dez. And I think it was the right thing to do. And as you can see, 2 months later, he doesn't have a job. Now, apparently turned down one from Baltimore, which I still don't understand. But this league is not falling all over itself to go out and get a receiver going into his ninth year who doesn't have speed anymore and has always had issues with his route running. So, I mean, I think in that sense it was time to move on. The question is, you know, did they move on with enough to give Dak a chance?
Yeah, of course. And did they move on not knowing that Jason Witten was going to retire? Because I know that they talked about giving him a replacement type of deal with salary and all that stuff. And then all of a sudden he retires to go to the Monday night broadcast.
Right. That came as a bit of a surprise to everyone. And he had even spoken about a month before that, saying there'll be a time where the TV job is attractive, but I might want to play 5 more years. And so Jason Witten, being who he is, I'm sure he was telling them the same thing. And then he got a different offer and a more lucrative offer in the Monday night deal. And I'm sure he had Tony in his ear saying, this isn't a bad gig. You wake up on Mondays feeling a lot better. So, yeah, I don't know what they would have done. They say they're fine with it, but I think that had to be a shock to them to know we got to replace not just Dez Bryant, we got to replace Jason Witten. Those are our two go-to receivers for the last 7 years.
Wow. I tell you what, I mean, say what you want about the Cowboys. They may not be great. Some years they are, but they're always interesting. Hey, Tim, thanks for joining us on Schooled with the Professor.
Hey, you bet, John. Anytime.
And that does it for this week's podcast. In between episodes, you can follow me on Twitter at ClaytonESPN. If you enjoy these weekly one-on-one conversations, consider leaving a review on iTunes or wherever you're listening to the show. Thanks for listening. See you next time on Schooled with a Professor.